Finally, Gellin's turn came, and he found himself in the commanding officer's reception area. Tolan had not been a slob, but Bakarian's offices already looked shinier, neater. Everything gleamed, smudgeless. Every paper on the clerk's desk aligned perfectly with every other.
A martinet, like Lupescu.
In the inner office, Bakarian waited, sitting motionless behind her desk, like a carved figurine.
Corporal Meharry, reporting as ordered, sir.
It was hard not to react when her cold gaze met his.
You don't look much like your sister. Why is it the men in a family so often get the looks, I wonder?
Gellin felt his neck go hot, then the flush spreading up his face. Her smile warmed.
Sorry, Corporal. Didn't mean to embarrass you.
Yeah, right.
Gellin hoped that looking like a silly boy was the best strategy now.
I met her only a few times, of course. I was shocked and surprised when I heard she'd been sentenced to prison, and delighted when her name was cleared again.
A wrinkle appeared in her forehead. Gellin was sure it was intentional, intended as a sign of sincerity.
It may be hard for you to believe, Corporal, but when I was serving on Admiral Lupescu's staff, I had no idea he was capable of any dishonesty. He seemed so focused on defeating the enemy.
That was one way of putting it. If you ignored the fact that Lupescu's allies paid the price of his focus as well as the enemy, the fact that he liked seeing bloodshed in quantity, and didn't much care whose it was. Bakarian was frowning now, slightly, as if he'd failed to carry out some order.
I hope we can work together.
Yes, sir.
Bakarian's face relaxed, but whether that was good or bad, he could not tell.
Did you request assignment here because your sister had been here?
Gellin had anticipated this question.
No, sir. Personnel noticed I hadn't had a tour in my secondary specialty and yanked me off Flashpoint right before deployment. I asked for Sector 3, so I'd at least be in the same sector as the ship, but they sent me here.
Do you find it difficult?
No, sir.
What do you think of the general loyalty of the officers and men on this station?
Loyalty? I'm not sure I know what the commander is asking about.
Don't play innocent, Meharry. Anytime you have prisoners and guards, you have the possibility of collusion, even a breakout. I'm asking you if you know anything about such a situation here.
No, sir. Nothing like that.
Bakarian gave him another searching look.
Very well. Dismissed.
The autumn evening was closing in, a fine cold mist blowing across the courtyard. Gellin shivered. It was a week yet until time to change to winter uniforms, but it wasn't the outward cold that chilled him. The 10 kilometers to Stack 2 and 12 to Stack 1 might as well have been the thousands of kilometers that stretched to the next continental mass for all the good it did him. He could not pilot any of the air cars, even if the air cars had not been kept under close guard. There were no surface watercraft. The stacks had no beaches or harbors where such craft could land. Water met rock with brutal suddenness 20 meters below the lowest accessible path. In storms, the spray of that meeting shot upward 30 and 40 meters. He could swim, but he could not swim 10 kilometers in water that cold, even if the sea creatures didn't eat him.
No escape.
He was trapped as surely as any of the prisoners. Gellin had no doubt that Bakarian would try to have him killed, and in such a way that it required the least investigation, which meant probably not shooting or stabbing or even a fatal blow to the head, any of which would require sending his body for forensic examination. She might or might not have a collaborator in the medical facility on Stack 1. Though such a murder could be blamed on a prisoner, far more useful for her purposes would be a disappearance, something that would leave the blame on him. If he went AWOL, as he had been thinking of doing, he realized with a start, Bakarian would be free to make up whatever story she liked about him. The most likely thing was a quick toss over the cliff, alive or dead. Alive, probably. Because then Bakarian's agents could honestly claim not to have harmed him. She would not order an attack until she was sure it would succeed. Until she was sure she had enough support. He had a little time to make his preparations, minimal though they could be. Three Stack had 50 personal protective units, planetary, in storage. In theory, a PPU would protect its wearer from the rigors of a planetary climate as well as a variety of traumas. Abstracting a personal protective unit from stores would definitely attract attention, but they were inventoried only once a month.
Will the attack come in that time? Probably.
But a PPU wouldn't be enough to keep him alive in the ocean. He needed something else. Aircraft carried survival gear. They did occasionally come down in the ocean, and the crew did occasionally survive to use the life rafts and other gear. There was a manual, he had seen a copy once, on surviving such wrecks, modified from one written by people who liked to sail around in boats. But he had read the manual out of boredom while waiting for a shuttle flight, and with the casual contempt of someone who would never be stupid enough to get himself in a situation where the details presented would be important. Methlin had always said, learn everything you can. Meth had survived worse.
Why do big sisters have to be right so often?
Spare survival gear for the aircraft based at Three Stack was stored in a locked bay on the shore side of the hangar. In his first month on station, he had been part of the inventory team that preceded the annual IG inspection. He remembered clearly the fat bundles, like sausage lumps, that were stacked next to the outer wall. Heavy, awkward, and not something he could tuck under his arm.
So, where can I stash something like that?
Before he took it, he had to have a place to hide it, and he spent the next few off shifts looking. Everywhere on the limited surface of the stack, someone else had reason to be. The two main lava tubes were in regular use. One had a small lift tube fitted into it. Personnel were up and down several times a day, though most didn't venture beyond the stacks of reserve supplies piled at the foot, and the little nest of discarded clothing just around the corner, where those who wanted to keep their encounters private bedded down in the warmer months.
Still, it's the only place.
The smaller of the tubes opened to the outside, above the high tide level except in storms. Generations of guards had broken a connection between the two. He was not the only one who had stood in the sea opening watching the waves at closer range, and even trying to catch one of the native sea creatures on a molly line. As long as no one saw him actually dragging a deflated life raft into the sea cave, his presence in the tubes would cause no notice. He hoped. He felt clever about figuring out a way to get the folded raft through the buildings and into the lift tube without detection. He didn't have to take it himself. He'd stenciled it with a supply code and simply told a pivot to take it down with other supplies when the next load came in. Supply drops were chaotic enough that no one noticed, or seemed to, when an extra container went down. Later, he found it, and, having borrowed an AG dolly, floated it down the tube, through the gap, and to his chosen hiding place. He felt better after that, even though his chances were still, he felt sure, closer to 0 than 100. At least he had a chance, if a small one. Once that was done, Gellin's mind turned to Bakarian's plans, not his own.
What is she up to?
He was as sure as if he'd crawled into her head that she had sought this assignment, but he could see no reason why. She would not have come here because of him. Surely revenge on Methlin Mahari's little brother wasn't profit enough for 3 years on Stack 3. He needed to find out what Bakarian was planning and report it, if he could figure out how. He was not in Bakarian's confidence, and he had no access to the administrative offices anyway. That would just get him killed faster. As the days passed, Gellin found that acting normal stretched his nerves almost past bearing. Inspections, chores, guard duty, wondering which of the guards and which of the prisoners were in on the plan, and yet again what the plan was. If only he knew what was going on. But although it became increasingly obvious that something was, that he was being left out of meetings and plans, he could not find anything out. He had not considered himself a trusting soul, but now, trying to trust no one, he realized that he had the normal human desire to be part of a group, not a complete outsider. Margue Pardalt had accepted a position as junior instructor in the schools and discovered that she enjoyed teaching. As the weather eased, bringing the occasional cool breath from the far north, her spirits lifted. Xavier had never been quite as hot as Copper Mountain in summer, and she looked forward to winter here. Unlike some of the others, who never took to planetside life, she enjoyed learning more about the world she was on. Her first chance to travel came in the break between class sessions, and she didn't even have to use leave time. priority directives of very high classification had to be hand-carried from base to base. Ensign Pardalt was the obvious choice. So, on a morning that was not quite crisp, but at least not stifling, she accepted a case full of directives, locked it to her belt, and climbed aboard one of the regular supply air cars headed for Camp Angleton. She sat on a sack of something lumpy and uncomfortable for 2 hours. The supply air cars had no passenger slings, and watched the red sand brush country give way to dirty green coastal grasslands and then dark green trees standing in brown water. She had only 15 minutes to deliver the directives to the base commander, but 15 minutes of the sticky heat and sulfur stench of the swamp forest was more than enough to quench her curiosity. She was glad to climb back into the air car, now headed for dry lands. The lumpy sack she'd been sitting on had been unloaded along with others, and the crew chief now had room to rig a seat of sorts. That flight took several hours. She fell asleep in the noisy cargo compartment, waking when the air car came down through the late afternoon sun.